Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1997. What is a patriot to do?
Hello. Perhaps you have heard about the decision of the New Orleans School Board last month to change the name of one of the city's schools, George Washington Elementary School, to Charles Richard Drew Elementary School, a decision which has been hailed as politically correct by all of the usual suspects. In case you didn't know, Charles Drew was a man of mixed race, slightly mixed anyway, approximately an octoroon judging by his appearance, who, working under the direction of a white professor while at Columbia University just before the Second World War, helped in the development of new methods of preserving and storing blood and blood components. In 1940, he was appointed the head of a Blood for Britain program to ship dried blood from the United States to Britain. Although Drew certainly deserves credit for his work in the blood bank field, groups searching desperately for non-white achievers to hold up as proofs of racial equality have made a bit too much of his accomplishments and a bit too much of his supposed blackness. They have unabashedly proclaimed him a black man when he actually was about 7/8 white. Changing the name of that elementary school in New Orleans last month wasn't based on a decision that Drew's accomplishments were more deserving of recognition than Washington's, of course. It was based on the fact that Charles Drew has been represented in black history curricula as black, and George Washington was indisputably white. Actually, the specific reason given for the name change was that George Washington owned black slaves, and that makes him an unsuitable person to hold up as a role model for elementary school students. You see, the fact that Washington owned black slaves means that he wasn't an egalitarian. He didn't believe in racial equality. He was, therefore, a, dare I say it, a racist. So, certainly, we don't want schools named after him. That might make the kiddies think that we approve of racism. Now, people with a democratic turn of mind might try to excuse Washington's racism by pointing out that in his day, everyone was a racist. One could be a racist and still belong to the country club. Indeed, one could hardly belong to the country club without being a racist. Everyone of quality, of intelligence, of accomplishment was a racist. So you see, Washington wasn't such a bad person after all if he was just going with the flow. But that democratic excuse doesn't hold any water for today's egalitarian zealots, who otherwise are such great admirers of everything democratic. Their response is, yes, yes, they all were racists. The memory of all of them should be blotted out. And so that's what they've been busy trying to do during these past few decades. They have been rewriting the history books and revising the school curricula to put these racist ancestors of ours in their proper place as the moral inferiors of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King, and as the intellectual inferiors of Charles Drew and George Washington Carver, the great black inventor of peanut butter, despite his parents' lack of sensitivity in choosing his name. And now the time has come to wipe out the last visible symbols of these wicked ancestors of ours. The time has come to make it perfectly clear to everyone that we definitely do not approve of them. And so they must be stripped of their honors, and their names and images must be removed from public sight. The zealots have been changing the names of boulevards and schools and other public institutions and buildings during the past few years, doing it rather quietly for the most part, trying not to rouse any opposition. Patrick Henry Boulevard has become Martin Luther King Boulevard. Robert E. Lee High School has become Frederick Douglass High School. 22 schools in New Orleans alone have had their names changed during the past 5 years for reasons of political correctness. And now George Washington Elementary School has become Charles Richard Grew Elementary School. And where is the opposition? Where is it? Of course, the mass media have not been making too much noise about this business of changing names, and so the couch potatoes have not even looked up from their ball games and situation comedies. There has been a little twittering among some of the conservative Americans who have heard about this. One or two newspaper columnists who cater to conservative readers have expressed just a whiff of polite indignation. Not too much, of course. They don't want anyone to think that they are racists. That must have been the thinking of the white members of the New Orleans School Board. It's true that they were outnumbered by the black majority on the school board. Blacks are becoming the majorities on the school boards of all too many of our cities. But the vote to scrap the memory of George Washington because he was a racist was unanimous. The white school board members, good Democrats all, voted with the black members. Certainly they didn't want to vote against the blacks and let people suspect them of being racists. They remind me of the whites on the O.J. Simpson jury. And so now the zealots may proceed with their campaign, considerably emboldened by the lack of resistance. They may proceed with the destruction of our past. We have tacitly given them our permission. And you know, the real aim of their campaign is the destruction of our future. When we no longer honor our great and noble ancestors, when we no longer care about them, when we no longer even remember them, then we have no future. Then our race will become extinct, and other races will inherit the earth. That is the real aim behind this campaign to rename our schools and other institutions. And really, how long do you think it will be, at the rate the zealots are pushing things now, before most white kids have no idea who George Washington was or Patrick Henry? The feminists and the homosexuals and the Jews and their collaborators can hardly wait. They hate our great and noble ancestors because those ancestors rejected them and everything that they stand for. Do you think that George Washington would have smiled politely if he had encountered a couple of homosexuals holding hands and kissing each other in his favorite tavern? Do you think he would have remained politely silent if feminists and Jews were openly pushing the sort of socially destructive programs in his day that they have been pushing in ours? Do you think he would have socialized with someone like Bill Clinton? And of course, on top of all that, he was a racist. And so they can enlist the support of the blacks in their campaign to blot out our past and our future. Do you think that I make too much of this Clintonista program to rename our public schools? Am I justified in seeing a serious plan on the part of our enemies to destroy our children's memory of their ancestors just because they're renaming all the schools and other public places which now carry the names of white racists? Is this really something we ought to take seriously? Something which merits our contemplating serious action in response? And I tell you, yes, it is something that we must take seriously. It is part of a larger plan to destroy our people. It is a plan which has been undergoing implementation for decades now, but has been greatly speeded up in the Clinton era. It is a plan with many separate programs, and the changing of the names of schools is only one of those programs. The overall plan is to destroy everything in our society which ties us to our history, to our traditions, to our values, to our racial identity. Our concepts of personal honor, of propriety, of right and wrong also are under attack. And the people who are behind this plan, the Jews and their collaborators, have never had a better opportunity to push it forward than now, when they have a piece of filth in the White House who respects nothing, who honors nothing, who values nothing beyond himself. A true child of the 1960s, a genuine narcissist, a real smartass who believes that he can get away with anything and is willing to try anything as long as the media Jews will cover for him. Clinton's unrelenting attacks on America's armed forces ever since he came into office are based in large part on the tradition of honor associated with the military. That's what makes them so hateful to the Clintonistas. Clinton first tried to force the armed forces to accept homosexuals. He then appointed anti-military civilian bureaucrats to oversee the armed forces and implement every program they could to destroy military morale and military spirit. Just a few days ago, one of those bureaucrats, a radical feminist that he appointed to the post of Assistant Secretary of the Army, Zahra Lister, publicly denounced the U.S. Marines as extremists because their concepts of honor and tradition are a bit stronger than those of the other armed forces. She sneeringly referred to the Marines, quote, checkerboard fancy uniforms and stuff, close quote, as one of the things which makes them extremists, one of the things which has to go in order to make good politically correct Democrats out of the Marines. Pardon my language, but how much of this kind of crap does it take to accomplish what these filthy animals are trying to accomplish? Sarah Lister got the boot when her denunciation of the Marines evoked an angry response from too many people. But thousands of people like her remain in the Clinton government, and what they are doing is corrosive. It is destructive. Any nation, any people which puts up with it is on the way out. Miss Lister, by the way, was the one Bill Clinton had in charge of doling out burial lots at Arlington National Cemetery to people with the right connections. What is a patriot to do about this situation? What is a member of the small minority of white Americans who are perceptive and able to think for themselves, a member of the small minority still able to entertain an undemocratic thought? What is he to do when he understands what the enemies of his people are up to, and when he contemplates the timidity of most of his fellows and the opportunistic collaboration of many others with those enemies? It is a discouraging prospect indeed. One can sympathize with those who lash out violently against this situation. One can understand and sympathize with their anger and frustration, even if one does not agree with their tactics. One can even understand the Islamic fundamentalists who denounce America as the great Satan and regard this country as a danger to the whole world. We don't have to accept Islam to agree with them that American society has become dangerously pathological. A self-destructive society which has aircraft carriers and nuclear weapons is a danger to everyone. Many people have written to me or spoken to me and have told me that they agree with my analysis of the situation in America and that they share my values and my concerns. But they also have been much more pessimistic than I am. They tell me, "Oh, we have waited too long to take action. It is too late to save this country now. Just look at the numbers. Look at how many blacks there are in our cities. Look at how many Mexicans and Asians already are in our country. And millions more are coming in every year. If we try to straighten things out, it will become a bloody mess, and millions of our own people will be killed. Besides, there's no way we can unite our people for such a struggle because the Jewish grip on the media is too strong." And so they do nothing, except perhaps make plans to send a few letter bombs to their favorite politicians or Jewish media bosses in a futile gesture of protest a la Ted Kaczynski. And you know, the people who tell me these things are not stupid. I cannot dispute their facts. I cannot dispute their numbers. I am sure that they are correct about things becoming a bloody mess in America. I agree with them that it will be very difficult to organize our people while the Jews still have almost a total monopoly on the media of communication. I agree with them that the hour is very late indeed. But I do not believe that it is too late to do anything. I do not believe that we must sit on our hands and watch our enemies destroy our future. Try to look at our situation from a historical perspective. Think of what's at stake here. It's not a question of either preserving the peace or causing bloody chaos. It is a question of existence or non-existence. Think of the long course of development of our civilization from the ancient Greeks and Romans up to the present. More than that, think of the uncounted millennia of prehistoric development of our people, the millions of years of separate evolution through ice age after ice age that made us what we are. Think of all of the great and noble souls that have belonged to our people, the great poets and philosophers and leaders that we know about as well as the ones we can't know because they lived during the prehistoric era. Think about all of their aspirations through the ages. Think about their struggles and sacrifices so that their generation could survive and give birth to the next. Think about the horrors and suffering that they endured over the millennia. Think about the invasions of the Huns and the Avars and the Moors and the Mongols. Think about the Indian wars and the scalping parties our American ancestors endured. We owe everything we have to them. It is our responsibility to pass on to the next generation what these earlier generations have given to us, no matter what it takes, not to wring our hands and moan that it is too late. Certainly, there will be bloody chaos if we resist the Jews and their collaborators. Certainly, millions of our own people will die in the chaos. But it hardly can be worse than what our ancestors already have endured so that we might be born. It hardly can be worse than the bloody chaos our Celtic ancestors endured when Caesar's army, acting for an already decadent Rome, devastated their homeland, destroyed their cities and villages, butchered their men, and carried their women off into slavery. It hardly can be worse than the bloody chaos our Germanic ancestors endured when the Huns invaded Europe more than 1,500 years ago. It hardly can be worse than the bloody chaos the Russian and Ukrainian people suffered during the Mongol invasions of the Middle Ages. It hardly can be worse than the bloody chaos that Jewish Bolshevism inflicted on our people in Europe in this century, a chaos in which millions of our best people were murdered or worked to death in forced labor camps simply because they were the best and therefore the most hated by the enemies of our people. Yes, the great cleansing which must come will destroy millions of our own people, the innocent along with the guilty, the good along with the bad. And the longer we wait, the more it will destroy. But eventually, it must come, because otherwise our whole people will die. And everything that has gone before, as well as everything that might come in the future, will be lost forever. The great cleansing must come, and we must do whatever it takes to ensure that it does, so that our people will live. And we should not flinch from this. We should not focus on the fact that it will be horrible and bloody, but on the fact that it is necessary. And because it is necessary, it is good. And because it is something which should come soon, it should be looked upon as a great challenge and a great opportunity for those of our people who are in their 20s or their 30s now. They will have a greater opportunity to serve their people, to serve the future with great and noble deeds than almost any generation which has come before. There will be many heroes, many who will be remembered as the saviors of their people to the ending of the world. Think about it. Thanks for being with me again today.